Oh, that's all right. You can do a direct job here. Small stick is okay if you don't.
Then how do you like the incense, the powder incense?
Oh, just like that.
Oh.
And then I just.
Oh, just directly.
Light it directly because this thing is can reach in inside. alive. Okay?
Amitabha's body is a color of gold, the splendor of this home marks it as no peer. The light of his brow shines round the 100 worlds, wise as the seas as his eyes clear and clear, shining in his brilliance by transformation. Countless bodhisattvas and infinite Buddhas, his 48 vows will be a liberation. In nine lotus days did we reach a farther shore. Homage to the Buddha of the Western Pure Land, kind and compassionate Amitabha. To the Buddha of the Western Pure Land, kind and compassionate Amitabha. Homage to the Buddha of the Western Pure Land, kind and compassionate Amitabha.
Namo Amitabha. Amitabha, 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 Amitabha,
陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛。
阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，
陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛。
Find your seat. Okay, you mind powering up for me, please? Hit the power button. First of all, I have one thing we need to settle. Recognize this?
Yes.
Do you recognize this? This is the cord for the microphone. Yeah. You recognize this? Anyone recognize this?
No.
No? Anyone recognize this white piece here? Because I didn't handle this. Someone put this here. This is not ours. Okay?
That's not our cord?
No, this is the white stuff here. That's theirs.
The uh-huh.
Yeah, this thing is theirs, not ours. It's not a big deal. But be careful, because this is considered stealing under the Buddhist precept. Because this has an owner, and they didn't give it to us, and we took it. It's not a big deal. This is probably, less than a dollar. But the point is that, be careful.
I don't think anybody would get that put in there, though.
Huh?
I would wrap it up, and I would put it away, but I would...
No, we borrow, we use theirs as well as ours, and therefore, good morning. Therefore, they get mixed up. But I recognize this is not mine because I didn't buy this, okay? And I recognize this as when they wrap theirs, they put this, okay? So be careful. Don't even take this kind of thing. That does anything that does not belong to us, don't touch it, okay?
So do you want us to take it back there?
There were things like that in the bag, though, Master.
Which bag?
In your pouch, your case that all of your microphone stuff was
no,
in.
No, it doesn't. If somebody put it there. I definitely did not buy this.
Oh.
You see the number here? That's their marking, so that they can tell. There's a court number one, number two, number three, and so on. Okay, so. Let's return this, okay?
I'll take it back.
Okay, there you go. Thank you. Be careful. This small thing like that is very important. Little things like that will get us in trouble. Because if we're not careful about cause and effect, we pay very dearly. We didn't know it's a minor thing, okay? But I know, so it's not a minor thing for me, okay? Now, all right. Let's request Dharma and
I remember going. The last time we had to use their cord because we couldn't find that.
Yeah, we unwrapped a lot of stuff.
Master, I noticed a new plaque on the mantle. Could you explain something about that?
Yeah, we'll talk about it.
There's a canopy of light on top.
Huh?
Is that a canopy? A picture of a canopy on top?
Yeah.
Fill the Sangha with great virtues out of compassion. For the sake of this assembly and all living beings, please turn the wonderful Dharma wheel to teach us how to leave suffering and attain bliss and end birth and death and quickly realize non-birth.
Namah. mo sa dam tu su je do ye a la ho di sa myang sam pu to si ye
nam mo sa dam tu su je do ye a la ho di sa myang sam pu to si ye
nam mo sa dam tu su je do ye a la ho di sa myang sam pu to si ye
nam mo sa dam tu su je do ye a la ho di sa myang sam pu to si ye
Namo Sadanto Suche Doye Ola Hodi Samyo Samputosye
Namo Sadanto Suche Doye Ola Hodi Samyo Samputosye
The unsurpassed, deep, profound, subtle, wonderful Dharma in 100,000 million aeons is difficult to encounter. Now that I've come to receive and hold it within my sight and hearing, I vow to fathom the thus come one's true and actual meaning. All Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, Great Master Shenhua, all good known advisors, Amitofo.
Amitofo.
You hear about Mel's mother passing away?
No.
No. Mind telling us about that, Janine or Mel?
I'll tell you if you wish. My mother, Beulah May Wright, passed away Thursday at 1:40 from heart problems, and actually congestive heart failure that had been going on since probably mid-May. She was in the hospital and being treated, and I got her a plaque, and the plaque probably extended her life, but well, actually I got her two plaques, and so I think the plaques extended her life probably a month or a month and a half. And to talk to her and finish off their meeting with her, everyone that wanted to at any rate. And I've been meditating for her and meddling heavily for weeks and weeks and weeks, and even though it's been difficult, it's okay. I meditated right after I heard that she had passed on, and saw a vision of her completely at peace, with her eyes closed, but with a slight smile on her face. All I could see was her face. I didn't see anything else. So I think she's all right, and I think she's probably going to some heaven. She was very spiritual, and much more than I, and had a prescient ability to see things and hear things and know things, spirituality things. And probably had some form of heavenly eye, so probably be all right. And have some time when you think about it. I would appreciate you wishing her the best.
Our condolences with your family. It's a trying time for you. Probably affect you deeply. What happened? She had surgery, right?
They never did the surgery. No, they were going to, and she never got well enough to have the surgery.
Oh.
She had, I didn't know whether you want to get into details or not, she had a aortic valve closure, calcification of the aortic valve. She was 93 years and 11 months old. Mm-hmm. And her heart had started to malfunction, and the malfunctioning that caused her to start depositing fluid in her legs and her hands and wrists. Mm-hmm. And so they did all they could do with the medication, and because of her age and because of her condition, when they finally determined what was the matter with her, they never could operate or do any of the surgical procedures.
So they had to watch her dying, basically.
Had to watch
not
her dying.
Not the whole thing.
Had to watch her dying.
You can do. Yeah. Okay. But you said that at toward the end she didn't have to. She wasn't on drugs at all.
They took her because they weren't going to do the surgery. There was no use perpetuating her condition, mm-hmm. So they took her off of the drugs. And
when that happened?
Monday.
Monday took her off
Monday
the drugs.
Monday took her off the drugs, and she got better.
They always do that.
She got better off of the drugs.
They do when it's the last, they'll
put like the flame.
Yes, they go off and then.
I see.
And so she spent Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Wednesday morning talking to people, sorta. She was, their throat was dry and she was having trouble. They wouldn't give her hardly any moisture because when she took moisture, because of the poor heart function, it would fill her lungs with fluid. So she was getting dehydrated and demanding water and wanting a drink and wanting a drink and nobody would give it to her. But so she couldn't talk very well, but she did talk to my sister and her children and to me, and I went and meditated with her four different times. Mm-hmm. And we parted very, very amicably. And that's not to say that we weren't that way anyway, but the meditation helped. That's
Who's her favorite in the family? Who is she closest to?
Me.
You? Oh. Are you the oldest?
Yes. Okay. Just my sister and I. There's only the two of us.
Okay. Well, see, it's pretty good that she didn't have to undergo a lot of pain and suffering in her final days, especially when she wasn't on drugs. That's pretty good. Gives a clarity, and usually you pay the price in terms of, if you're not on drugs, the body complains a lot.
Yes.
So it's pretty good that she wasn't in pain.
Tuesday, the lawyer came that we hired to set up a trust, and she was clear. She had clarity. She talked to the lawyer and as best as she could talk, and signed the documents and. Be certified that she knew exactly what was going on.
That's good.
What they do, it's barbaric, but when the person gets in this particular shape, I'm sure Roberta knows about this, they to keep them from having any pain, they start asking, do you have any pain? And the minute you have some pain, they give you morphine. And then they put you on the morphine, and the morphine causes you to go to sleep often because you are subdued and unconscious. And they put you on intravenous morphine, and it keeps you asleep all the time, and so you get dehydrated and low on food and pass away. There was nothing they could do for her congested heart, and the heart had started to fail too because of the fluid. The fluid was building up quicker each time.
Yeah, with a heart problem, I'm sure that the whole body breaks down, not just the heart. The whole house is rotten. There's nothing you can do. So the heart condition causes the long, very long-term problems.
Oh yeah, everything.
That's practically irreversible. When you reach the point, I know about a heart surgeon, and he says basically that you have a heart problem, and when you have to operate, that's when they don't want to operate, because that's when they get the lawsuits.
Oh, okay.
Because everything goes wrong.
It gets to a point of irreversibility and you can't really.
And there's no sense in operating on the heart anymore. Because you operate the heart, you may do something and something now goes wrong. So he says basically when the heart has serious heart problems, you can't fix it. And they would ask him to operate as a last effort, he would refuse.
That's what happened to her. That's why they moved her to Loma Linda to operate. And then
and they looked at her and said, no.
The surgeon came in after putting it off and putting it off and putting it off and said, you know, she's not in good enough shape to operate, so we're not going to.
Yeah. Basically, they gave
up. And she got worse. I mean, she didn't get better. She got worse. He implied they'd try to get her better with the drugs. What she had was the main valve that comes out of the heart that goes into the aorta was calcifying and had gone from 1.5 centimeters down to 0.6 centimeters. And so she wasn't putting enough pressure or enough pressure but not enough blood around at the right speed for things to work. And the only solution to that was aortic valve angioplasty, or put in a new valve. And that means cut you open and chop up your heart and put a new valve in that spot. And the angioplasty lasts maybe for a few months, a year at the most. And the valve is very life-threatening. At her age, they were all guaranteed that she wouldn't make it through it. So.
Okay. Any questions, comments? Janine emailed me Thursday afternoon around 5 or 6 p.m. I was working and I had Google Talk so I could get the email right away. I was notified right away. And so so I suspended my work and prepared a plaque for her, rebirth plaque for her. And the funny thing happened. As soon as I finished this plaque, that's her plaque, by the way. That's for her.
Oh.
See, we Buddhists have certain knowledge about death, so that this is the Dharma we go through. And as soon as I finished the plaque, she became very serene and very grateful. So don't think that they don't know. Okay, so the very minute I finished it, because I need to prepare it, I need to, it took me about 10-15 minutes before I could get it done. As soon as I was done, she expressed her gratitude, right? And she was deeply grateful because it's my gift to her. Okay? No one asked me, but this is what I know I should be doing. So I did it for her sake. Okay. She knew right away. It's a fascinating thing. Okay. She knew right away that this is good for her. So don't think that this is a Buddhist thing. Okay. So she became very grateful and she showed me her state. And I said, wow, that's a pretty good state. Okay. And then yesterday morning, I did the actual ceremony to help her, okay? We have a ceremony to help her. And after the ceremony, I checked into her again. I found out that her state has even improved. She was in pretty good samadhi. I hope she doesn't overshoot. because this woman only wants to go to the Christian God heaven, okay?
That's all she knows about.
She
doesn't know anything else.
And it's not the best heaven in our world. It's pretty good, but it's not the best. And I told you my late Vietnamese master state. He went to the heaven of the four kings, the lowest level heaven in our desire realm. So I know the mother is at a much higher state. So when I begin to worry if she's going to overshoot.
Overshoot the...
the heaven. She only goes for two, okay? That's all she wants. And the problem with the medicine master plan, one of its benefits is that you get what you want. You get what you wish.
Oh.
You see?
Oh, okay. So. That's okay.
So she got into even a better state. And today you guys did well for the, today is the first hour. You guys did very well. You noticed that?
Yes.
Huh? Anyone notice any difference this morning?
It was very peaceful.
Yeah. Very, very peaceful. You even you coughed. Notice that? Somebody, you know what it means, don't you? So, it's pretty good. Let me explain to you what we Buddhists do, okay? Because we do know about birth and death, a lot more than you guys realize. Death is a very, very crucial time during our cultivation, because that's when we go into a state called intermediate skanda body. When you die, you become suspended. Your consciousness becomes suspended into something called intermediate skanda body. Okay? And after that, you go through a tabulation time, 49 days, where every 7 weeks you go in front of King Yama. He's the judge. So what he does is that every time you go meet him with your escort, usually two ghosts who escort you, like those bailiffs in the courts, you know, if not one, the two. So you can't move on either side. So you go in front of the judge will then look at the karmas you created this lifetime. And says, what have you got to say for yourself? And you present a case. You say, I've been good my life, you know, I did this, I did that. And then he's going to ask you a lot of questions about the good and the bad as well. He's going to ask you, where do you want to go? And you say, oh, I want to go to the heavens. Then he looks at your record and say, okay, you could go there, but you don't have enough yet. You don't have what it takes yet to be reborn there. Your blessings are inadequate. So he said, okay, what are my choices? He says, well, you could go to a lower realm. Okay? For example, when you go to heavens, there during your lifetime, if you wish to be born in heavens, there are three things you need to do. Number one, giving. This is where the Christian Dharma is correct. Christians give. And that's part of their dharma to be reborn in the heavens. That is a good part of the dharma, that's accurate. The more you give, the more blessing you have. Because up in the heavens, you basically are using up your blessings. Don't have to work. Don't have to do laundry even. Okay? Your clothes do not get dirty. You don't need to bathe even. You don't need to put fragrance even. Okay? So basically, you are doing nothing and receiving all these benefits. Where do you think that comes from? These benefits come from your savings. Right? Otherwise, the law of cause and effect doesn't apply at all in the heavens, which is impossible. Right? So you go up there, so you need to have accrue a lot of blessings. That's why the Christian Dharma is correct. You know Christians, you should encourage them to keep on giving in accord with their Dharma. That is the proper way. If they wish to be reborn, that's what they ought to do. Accrue the blessings, right? But that's not enough. There's one more thing, a couple more things. Another thing you need to do is keep precepts. That's also the good part about the Christian Dharma. They have the Ten Commandments, right? Except their precepts are not quite accurate. Precepts, really, the actual rebirth Dharma to the heavens is that you need to keep the five precepts, not the Ten Commandments. Okay? This is our understanding of the rebirth process, the reincarnation process. Okay? This is the Buddhist secret. So you're supposed to observe the five precepts. So for example, the Christian precepts of whatever they are outside of the realm of the five precepts, they're irrelevant for the rebirth. Alright? So far so good? There's one more thing. You need to do good as well. That's the third one. Okay? So, during your lifetime, if you keep precepts and do good, that's your accrual for your heavenly blessings, in other words. So far so good. But after you die, what happens?
You don't have any more.
You can't give anymore. What do you have? What have you got to give? It's too late now.
Yes.
You signed the trust away already. So how can you give? The living can give on your behalf. That's what's available. That the Christians, that normal people do not know about. Okay? So you can give on the behalf of the deceased. That's how they accrue their blessings, the heavenly blessings. So for 7 weeks, that period of time, you go and meet your judge, King Yama, every 7 days. Okay, so every 7 weeks, you should, as living beings, the still living ones, should be accruing benefits or blessings on the behalf of the deceased, so that when comes that judgment time with King Yama, okay, they have more blessings to work with. All right. There's a catch though. If you accrue those blessings, you do that on behalf of the deceased, according to the Earth Thor Sutra, you should be reading that, check that, double check that for your reference, only 1/7 goes to the deceased. 6/7 goes to the living. Okay?
The living person who gives it.
You get 6/7 of the value of the giving. The deceased only gets 1/7. Only. That's it. Okay? So it keeps on accruing for 7 weeks. And after 7 weeks, if you don't have enough, then the judgment is final. You go wherever you are. You can afford to go. Alright? So sometimes, for example, if you have a lot of blessings, you go in front of King Yama, and King Yama says, you want to go to meet to Shita Heaven, which is the fourth one in our desire realm, where Maitreya Bodhisattva is. She might overshoot that, by the way, which is not a bad place. Tushita Heaven has two areas, the inner court and outer court. Okay. The Tushita Heaven is the fourth heaven, so it's two levels higher than the Christian heaven. Therefore, it's even more blissful and acquires even more blessings. The outer court is even much more fun than the Christian God heaven. Okay, it's incredible. It's so that this heaven, that heaven is known as the heaven of contentment. You will be there, you will be so much more content than the lower heavens. Okay, but the inner court, that's a very tough one to get to. That's where Maitreya Bodhisattva is right now speaking Dharma. For example, then Lu Xun, great Master Xunhua's predecessor, when he died, he wanted to go there to draw near Maitreya Bodhisattva.
Not
Amitabha.
Wants to go there and then come back to rebirth again?
He wants to go there and learn from Maitreya Bodhisattva. That's what his wish was. That's a different story. Anyway, so the inner court is a fabulous place to be. Okay. But anyway, so that's how what happened during the 7 weeks. So that's why during the 7 weeks, we have a 49-day Dharma where we actually execute these Dharmas to help them accrue merit and virtue. Okay. They don't have to be Buddhist at all. These things are blessings, okay, towards the direction of, let's say, in our Dharma is towards the direction of rebirth in Amitabha's pure land, which is extremely difficult. Okay? It takes a lot of blessings. Okay? So all these blessings accrue. But if, for example, the deceased decides to go to another place, they still have a lot of blessings they can use up. to go there. Is it making sense now? Okay. Now, let me explain to you why Beulah, his mother, is grateful. You know why? Where do you think she is right now?
Waiting. And
I told you that you go through a state called intermediate skanda body, which is basically a consciousness.
Waiting in the skanda body.
Okay? Yeah, you're waiting. You're being suspended. So where do you go? Your consciousness goes where? It goes back to your body and says, this body is breaking apart. It hurts now. I'm not comfortable. Okay? But I'm still very attached to the body. Also, what also happens during that time is that your debtors come knocking on the door. There, you're besieged by your debtors. Okay? This is their last chance to get you before you go to another realm where they can't reach you anymore. Right? So you are really constantly besieged by debtors. People who want to collect right now, they can't wait anymore. Okay? So, first of all, your body is breaking apart, therefore it hurts a lot. Okay? And then all these debtors are around, they are besieging you. So your consciousness is what? Is constant, is very agitated. Okay? Very upset, very worried. Upset because it hurts. Worried because it sees these debts, these threats, okay, coming at them.
Does that start right away?
Oh yeah, right away.
Instantly? I mean from on death?
Even before death comes.
Okay.
But death is when things become more pressing for everyone. This is everyone's last chance, either to settle debts or to collect. Okay? So what happens is that you still attach to your body, you still attach to your home. Okay? That's why you hover around. Okay? But that's where they can access you.
That's right.
Right?
Right.
That's what they know, that's where you are. Right? So when we create a plaque for the deceased, what are we doing?
Paying debts?
No.
A place for them to be.
Sheltering. Right there. The minimum, even if you're not Buddhist, doesn't matter. Now the deceased has a place for them where they have shelter. Okay? For example, it's not only the any kind of shelter, but there's kind of shelter that they are surrounded by protectors now.
Ah, okay.
Does it make sense now?
Mm-hmm.
Why you want to go to a temple, why you want to go where the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas are? Because they're constantly surrounded by protectors, Dharma protectors. It's just like you go, you own a debt and you need to go to the White House to collect from Mr. Bush.
Oh yeah.
What are your chances? What are your chances? Yeah. You think?
He's the wrong one.
What are your chances that you get to see him at all?
None.
Depends who you are. Depends who you are. But you see, that's what it really narrows down who can access you. Okay? So that's the what we do. Whether you believe or not makes no difference. Okay?
How long do you stay in the suspension?
49 days, 7 weeks.
Oh.
Nice warrior.
At the end of 49 days, that's it. If you have enough, you go right away. That's why some people are reborn right away, reincarnate right away. For example, the people who have enough blessings for rebirth to Western Bliss Prayer Land, they go just like that. Or when they go, whenever they have enough. And Amitabha and Wan Yin Bodhisattva and Great Strength Bodhisattva come and greet them and ferry them back. Okay. Any questions?
In three meditations, she has appeared face fully formed back out, and she was she had lost a lot of weight, mm-hmm. with closed, serene eyes and a slight smile on her face. And I hadn't seen her in all meditations, but I've seen that in three of them. Mm-hmm. And so is she in Skanda, is that Skanda body, and she's not being assailed yet to look like that?
She's being shielded.
See the face. The shield started. And so she's just resting.
Yeah. Okay. She's being shielded.
Okay.
Because normally at that time, you're supposed to be very upset. Extremely worried. Extremely confused. That's a normal state that dead people undergo. They're extremely confused. Listen, these debtors are merciless. This is it. That's all they got. You kill them in the past, for example. This is the only chance they have to get at you. Until the next time. So they get pretty violent. So it's not... The body is only nimble. That's why we practice so that we can rise above the body discomforts. Mm. Mm. Because what matters at that time, remember when you read the 10 Dharma realms are not beyond a single thought?
Right.
What they do is they go there and they harass you here. Yeah. You afflict it, that's when you go for rebirth. Okay?
So you go to the judge, the king?
King Yama. You get to know that name.
Yeah, Yama.
You get to see him. I can guarantee you that.
King Yama.
Yeah.
Yama.
King Yama.
Y-A-M-A.
Yama.
Yeah. Y-A-M-A. Y-A-M-A.
King Yama.
Is it equivalent?
No one can skip that.
Is it the equivalent in the Bible? St. Peter and the Pearl Gate, is it the same thing?
No. That's baloney.
Oh. I love that.
It sounds like it's the book of your life.
Yeah, sounds good, that kind of
part
thing.
Of it. You know, when God looks at the book and decides what he's going to do with it.
It must be something.
Sounds more like that.
Because if they know the whole, the entire process, they can't claim that only God is God and you cannot become God. Because when you go to that Christian heaven, you become a god or a goddess, period. But you're not a king, okay? It takes a lot more to be a god king, a king god, okay? That's why it depends on the amount of blessings you have. The kings have it even better than we do. They have more wives. It's expensive to have a wife, you don't know.
We only
have one. And
well, the Mormons have more than one.
Yeah. But in the heavens, you have concubines. It's okay to have concubines. That's why you become a god. We sort of get novelty.
The concubines are
I don't know about them, but...
So,
well, if you say that all you have is a smile, okay?
That's a one-night stand, that's different.
All right. Or, but your eye, okay.
Okay. King Yama, when do you meet King Yama then during this 49 days, after the 49 days, every 7 days?
Every seven days.
Yeah. Until 49 days are up, and then they say you're up or you're down or wherever.
Yeah.
I see. So once...
From the date of death.
And the king is very, very, very good man, actually. He says, where do you want to go? Okay. He's very, very fair in that sense. He doesn't say, you're a bad person. He tallies everything, the good and the bad stuff you did in your lifetime. We said, okay, you, the balance is so-and-so today, okay? This is your balance. You know, the good and the bad balance out to a certain level or whatever score you get. And for this score, you want to go to the heavens? Be reasonable. You're lucky you're not going to the hells. That kind of thing. So, it really, this is where you have to face with your retributions.
What you've done.
Okay? So, that's why the 49-day period is very, very crucial right now to for the deceased, because it dictates to where they go.
Okay. Can we do a
what
for to Yama on her behalf, or do you do that with this?
You can't. First of all, you don't have the ability to do that. Number two is that even if you have the ability, your kung fu is not good enough. So what's the big deal?
I said we.
You can't. It's not. It's beyond your control. This is where you face with your own limitations.
Okay.
To know about it is one thing, but whether you have enough blessings to do it or not is another thing.
That's why I asked.
But that's why we have these dharma here, where I feel, for example, at your level right now, for example, you can sit in a room and handle 100 people easily. Your power is that level of kung fu is that much already. Easily, 100 people. They can't affect you. Yeah? Kung fu is at the level where he can sit in 100 people, and he enters samadhi and help those 100 people at the same time. Think you cross your legs. What for? Those are the times that you use it for. You have the choice. You have the ability to help them if you choose to. So today, for example, during our Buddha recitation, prelim recitation, I checked up and said, "Wow, today you turned the corner. Your kung fu increased, all of you. Make a difference. Make a difference." You saw the cricket, out there, right? Notice that. They know. Yes.
I overslept. Now I sleep till and. At 8:05, Josepha called, and I said, "I'm not even supposed to be here. How did you know I was here?" And she said, "I just knew." And I said, "But I'm missing Pure Land because." So we talked for 20 minutes. I thought that was intuitive.
She's gone to CTTB up there and talked to them. I'm going to teach the nuns.
No, they asked her if she
or
could
she
teach,
asked her if she teaches the nuns Qigong at CTTV. So she'll be in a good spot. I mean, if anything rubs off, it's got to be beneficial.
She'll teach Qigong?
Yeah.
But she's moved.
Now teaching over the college?
Oh, no.
She
moved.
No. Sold her house. I know her house is sold, but I didn't know she went that far away.
Oh, yes.
Well, she's up just
Dolphison.
40 minutes south of City of 10,000 Buddhas up in Yukata. She's not in Yukata, but she's just south of there. So that's the only thing we know so far about what she's doing.
So right now, during this time here, that's when you have to be careful not to be emotional with the deceased, because it affects their state of mind. For example, if you get emotional, then she might get attached to you and have a hard time getting reborn in the heavens. Okay.
I've been working as hard as I can on keeping non-attachment. It's difficult, but it's possible.
Yeah.
I was awake for about an hour in the middle of the night thinking about this emotional attachment. And where I'm so conflicted is because of my field of the arts. I started thinking, without emotional attachment, where would the beautiful poems, artwork, music, actors, where does this come from? And is there any, have Buddhists ever created anything in the arts? Because it's all tied in. I was thinking of all the writings that have come about because of someone's passing.
His master, his Vietnamese master, Thich Nhat Hanh,
yes,
wrote a book of poems.
But they aren't world famous.
They don't have to be. They just have to be the art you're talking about. He wrote a book of poems. Of course they do. You can enjoy the art without desiring to have it, and it's still art. Yeah, isn't that correct? I mean, doesn't the beauty of things still stay beautiful? You just don't desire and love it?
You only have to create it once.
But an actor draws from past emotional attachments to create the role that they are playing at the moment.
Yes.
Without being emotionally attached, how do you create?
The question is, how do you create? The question is, you look at it wrong. The question is, after you create it, are you still attached?
Oh, I see. Okay. Okay.
That's the difficulty. It's okay. Not the creation part. It's the letting go part that's difficult.
Okay.
If you
Anyone can create given the right conditions. There's no one can let go. Make sense now? It's not against the creative process. It's not against beauty. It's that the ability to create beauty and then let go.
Not get patted on the back.
Because look at this way. You heard about Leonardo da Vinci, right? He's a genius.
Yeah.
And he painted the Mona Lisa. Okay?
Yes.
He never could surpass it ever again. What happened to him? They said that towards the end of his creative life, his friend found him looking at the Mona Lisa and falling in love with his own creation.
Because they think it's his self-portrait, and he
can't let go of his creation. Okay? That's where you stop, that's where you die. That's where you can't grow anymore. You can't grow because you can't let go. Your cup is too full. You can't add to it anymore. Okay? So, you misunderstood the process. It's attachment is about letting go after you created it.
Okay.
The higher level Kung Fu people are the most creative people you can ever find. And they're better than we are because they can let go, because they keep on creating.
Thank you, Master.
You're beginning to open up. That's very good. Okay? You have to learn to open up. If you don't open up, you cannot be helped. Some of you are pretty good. Some of you make the corrections by yourself. As soon as I speak, I see you making corrections. I'm happy about that. But also, what's so important, you have to learn to open up. Especially when you disagree, that's when you open up. When your value system, your core value system feels so right that you have a hard time accepting the principle, accepting what I say, that's when you open up. You can't hide it. You hide it, no one's gonna touch it.
I've seen you struggle for a long, long time now, for a long time since I started to go deeper in the principle of sutra. You don't open up. If you don't open up, no one will touch you. That's your privacy.
Protection.
That's your choice. You want to keep it to yourself. We have to respect your wishes. Mahayana, folks.
Ego.
Mahayana. Not only ego is habit energies. Mahayana is about helping you get what you want, not what we want. What we want is irrelevant. You want to be reborn in heavens? I teach you how to be reborn in the heavens. You want to go to be an Asura realm? I teach you how to be an Asura realm. Okay? It's what you want. The Dharma doesn't differentiate between, you know, the god, aspiring goddesses, or the Pure Land. It's all the same. We give you the same Dharma to get what you want. You can't care less. It's not important. You want to go see Maitreya Bodhisattva? Go see Maitreya Bodhisattva. It's okay. It's not temporary. What's the big deal? That's his attachment. Don't you see? Mm-hmm. That's his attachment. He's still attached to that. It's all right. Patriarchs can be attached as well. Fenrusheno are so attached to helping us that it overwhelmed him. He's supposed to be here for 100 years. He had to die early because he overdid it. That's his attachment. Right? Right? So you have to learn to open up. That's what you have to do towards others. If others do not wish to open up, you have to respect the privacy. That's Mahayana. Yeah. It's not about being right and being wrong. It's about helping others get what they want.
Sometimes what they want may not be necessarily good for them.
That's all you can do. You say, you may want to go to the heavens, but this is a better thing you should be aware of. That's all you can do. You cannot make up their minds for them. What happened to Beulah right now, she said, I'll tell you a funny thing. To feel so peaceful, so tranquil, so blissful. And then after the crossover ceremony, she said, wow, this is even new. I didn't even know about this feeling before. All we can do is give them choices, make them aware of these different things. It's even better than you think, you know. That's all we can do.
She read Medicine Master Sutra, and she read the book Awakening, not Awakening, but the book he gave us a copy of. I can't think of the name of it right now. That, and Simplified Buddhism. She read all three of those in the last year or so. So, in fact, she had just done Medicine Master Sutra. I took that down to her and gave it to her.
All right.
So she's not unfamiliar. That's all I'm trying to say.
That's all we can do. All we can do is to feed them with information. That's it. As much as they can absorb. Okay? And bottom line is that they have to choose for themselves. Okay? Any questions, comments?
I'm sure she'll be confused.
Yes, questions.
Speaking of beauty, does this assembly have anything to do with what's happened to your...
Why? What are you getting at?
Well, I just noticed that when we first started coming here, your yard was sort of empty and dying, and...
The flowers are all blooming, really.
The grass was all brown, and everything, it just seems to have over the few weeks. The grass is greener, the flowers are blooming, it's really starting to look really beautiful out there, and I just wondered if this life...
It wouldn't be inaccurate. What happened is that there are lots of spirits and ghosts who live on those trees and all these vegetation. And maybe your sincerity is deep enough so that they were impressed and they decided to make an offering to adorn it.
It certainly is.
The yellow hibiscus is.
Oh, isn't
nice.
It? That's
very
what
nice.
I don't want.
You know, we don't even water the stuff back there. Everything is not water. We don't use water at all.
It just watered last
year. You look at the vine, the potato vine.
I know it's pretty.
Okay? We don't even trim it. It's like that. It's never watered. And you look at on the neighbor's house across the corner here. You go in the back and look at them. They also have a potato vine, a vine potato, whatever. You say, what is that called?
Ivy.
No, it's a potato vine.
It's a potato vine.
The morning glory?
Morning glory.
No, the potato vine, the big tree.
The purple one with the purple.
Yeah, with a lot of purple flowers.
I don't know the name of that.
There's another tree like there in our neighbor's backyard. It's a lot smaller. It doesn't have any flowers. Hardly has flowers. Ours is like, this is the least amount of flowers so far. Every year so far, this is the first year where it doesn't, every year has been full blooms the whole season, except for a couple of months where there's no leaves at all in the winter time. It blooms the entire year.
So we're affecting the ghosts. We're not affecting the flowers, we're affecting the ghosts.
Yeah, the flowers basically offerings from them.
Wow.
It's remarkable. What it really tells me, and you're very sensitive to the presence, to their sincerity. You don't pay attention to the flowers or the green. Those are only the manifestation you choose to connect with us. But you're more sensitized to their offering. You know what I'm talking about?
Mm.
They decided to make an offering that touch you. That's your sensitivity level. Sensitivity level.
Good or bad? Is that?
What do you think?
I don't know.
Don't get attached, no matter what it is.
We noticed it this morning, didn't we, Mel?
Yes, we did.
It's a lot more going on than our sensors can tell us. The funny thing is you keep on seeing these dead crickets and a couple of days ago I was sitting on the couch and a cricket crawled and touched me on the couch. As soon as I looked at him, he ran away.
I'm getting birds in my apartment.
Yeah.
My cat won't bother.
That's what we've said. This last year, it's like the animal and insect kingdom had just come to our house.
Why?
Our neighbors.
Why? Because safer.
They don't come in, though.
Our neighbors next door and across the street both have the Terminex people out. We have no...
Yeah, and I've stopped killing.
I mean, they're out. Oh, yes.
And I can't believe what's
come. They just don't come in. I've had neighbors complaining about the mosquito bites this year. I have had none. And
so,
they've been in the house. Okay, goodbye.
Yeah. Think about it. You talking about beauty. What about beauty? Where does beauty come from? Do you know?
Kindness,
goodness.
Yes.
At least for us normal people. For the abnormal people, beauty is different. Okay, let's be fair to them. For us, beauty comes from goodness. The creative process for it to transcend time has to contain a lot of goodness. You always have to see beauty in terms of painting or a work of art or a nice face. But what underneath that is the kindness and goodness in the state of mind of the creator that brought it about. Let me contrast that. If you constantly get angry and harbor hatred in your mind, guess what happens to your facial features? Unpleasant comments. Sure. Very unpleasant. Sure. Anyway, so moving on.
Thank you.
Section 29, proper concentration counteracts sexual desire. The Buddha said, be careful not to look at women. Do not talk with them. If you must speak with them, be properly mindful and think, I'm a Shramana living in a turbid world. I should be like a lotus flower which is not stained by the mud. So we talked about the dangers of sex. Now we again getting down to the nitty gritty here. Okay? Before even we talk about engaging in a sexual act, you have to be careful about this crescendo effect here. It builds up, okay? And start with looking, right? So he says, be careful not to look at them. To me, that's a very difficult thing to do already. And then he says, do not talk with them. Okay? And then, if you must talk to them, maintain your mindfulness and think that, remember where you are. You are living in a turbid world. What's turbid world?
Cluttered.
Turbid world is a world that is full of defilements, lots of temptations. And never mind about being a Shramana, maybe you should simply say, I'm a cultivator, I'm a married person, I'm a person holding the five precepts, I'm a good guy, okay? Living in a defiled environment, but I can choose to be like a lotus flower and not be stained by all these temptations, okay? Think of elderly women as your mothers, and those who are older than you as your elder sisters, and those who are younger as your younger sisters, and of very young girls as your daughters. Bring forth thoughts to rescue them and put an end to bad thoughts. Okay? Doesn't have to be women. Could reverse it. Think of elderly men as your fathers, those who are older than you as your elder brothers. Of those who are younger than you, your younger brothers, and very young boys as your
sons.
Okay?
Do you think that women have the problems that men have?
Yes. I think we're completely equal.
What do you think, RJ? Is that a fair question?
Probably, yeah.
But an age level's got to have something to do with that. I mean, I don't think anything today like I used to think when I was younger.
That's too bad.
I was going to say, what planet am I on?
Let me tell you about age level. For even before I started with Master Yuan Long, I was trying to break myself of looking at women. And when I look, I say, I'm going to not do that anymore. Okay? I'm not going to do that anymore.
Uh-huh.
And it, I have...
What kind of women, may I ask, you like to look at?
scantily dressed as possible.
This is a man who's almost the age of Mr. Hugh Hefner, okay?
And the reason I'm telling you the story is that I now, when I look, I think the same thing. I still think, I don't do that anymore, cut it out. But I look first and then have to tell myself that. It's not...
So before, like, you appreciate it, now you say, oh, I'm not supposed to appreciate this.
Well, that isn't quite how I explained it, but it's something like that.
Okay.
And I find it very difficult to break the habit.
Yeah, okay, so
it's a lifetime habit of looking around.
But here's an example of a Hugh Hefner type. Give me an example of a female equivalent.
Okay, I'm
not so certain I like that simile.
I find for elderly men, I find Clint Eastwood highly sexually attractive and intellectually attractive. A little bit younger, I like Hugh Jackman.
Oh, and he's handsome, isn't he?
Yes.
Oh, what a man.
And I don't think age has anything to do with appreciation of the human form.
Yes. Jackman?
Hugh Jackman.
He's extremely sexy. He exudes sexuality and class.
Eyes of the beholder, guys. I mean, really.
And I'm not homosexual, by the way. I abhor. It turns me off. Okay. That man exudes virility and class at the same time.
Yes.
I agree with you on all this.
He's much classier than Gere, for example. Gere is a little bit slutty.
Well,
he's a Buddhist.
Yeah, I know. But he still has that much. He's always selling sexuality a little bit. Jackman is a classy dude. So I know what you mean. It's not about, you know. Hey, just like
I gotta look again too.
You can't
see what you see.
See what you don't realize that you have to appreciate what people like males have to go through. What happened is that you can't say that this guy has very bad habits. Yes, he does. But also part among that, what you have to realize is that these women provoked him.
I'm
coming to his rescue because that's a fact.
If they all wore a gunny sack and a hat pulled down over their eyes, you wouldn't look.
Because they want him to look at them. And therefore, he only obliged.
You're connecting
so much about faith, huh?
There's no physical connection here. It's just look.
Oh, okay. All right.
And no physical connection. It's a look and think.
That's why I can just say.
No. Yeah, exactly the same. No, I'm joking. I'm joking, okay? But actually, what happened is that you, when you do these things, when you dress up and you put on makeup and do your hair and that kind of thing, it's in your energy is to draw attention to yourself.
Well, what are the guys
and therefore,
doing to draw attention to themselves?
We do exactly the same thing.
No.
You go to Montreal, for example. Okay. Men are much better looking than women.
I agree. They
much
don't
better.
Have to wear makeup.
That's true.
Much better
men
looking.
Better
you want to look
women.
At men?
Men
go to Montreal because they dress nicely. The hair is nice. Just like here, the roles are reversed. The shoes are perfect. The shirt are perfectly creased. The women are much more casual. Just the opposite, role reversal in Montreal, at least 15, 20 years ago. That was the case I found out. Okay? Men are so much more handsome. Women are so plain. Okay?
And but it's that way in all the animals. You look at the birds.
Yeah, the birds.
It's the male who's all gussied up.
Just to try to attract females.
They need to attract females, okay? Somebody's got to do it.
Oh, come on.
No, seriously, you see, so when you do all these things, you actually, there's a force behind it that draws attention to yourself. Whether you're male or female, makes no difference.
We have humanity.
The more you cultivate,
gene.
You have to be more honest with yourself because when you have to differentiate between you being drawn, is it coming from the outside or is it coming from the inside? That's what I'm teaching you today. Pay attention now. You can't simply say at your level right now is that I like to look at women. You have to now begin to see when you draw. And when you're not drawn. When you draw, it's forgivable. When you are drunk, that's when you need to look at yourself.
Really?
That's what we call today.
Yes.
What is that we are still attached that makes us look?
Yes.
Right?
So does that mean I'm not attached anymore?
It's easier for you for certain things. But on the other hand, don't be surprised when you get to a high level Kung Fu where actually you look at men, because actually what you're doing is you're drawn by their energy. They want your attention, you simply acquiesce. Am I making sense?
Mm. Yeah.
You have to pay attention now with the more Kung Fu you have. Okay? You cannot lump them. You're not dead. You still have eyes. You still can appreciate nice-looking things. Nothing wrong with that. They say, appreciate my beauty, appreciate my sexual energy, my sexual allureness. Okay? That's what they ask for. So that's why you follow the energy. But then you don't take a step further. Yes, you're sexy. Yes, you're attractive. But that's not what I'm looking for. You have to be honest to yourself. You can't say that Hugh Jackman is not handsome. That he's not. He doesn't have the sexual energy. He has so much sexual energy that he exudes. Now even I can sense it.
Get rid of the binoculars at my house.
She can be honest about and talk about it. I'm sorry.
Should I get rid of the binoculars that I keep in my office with?
Well, let's not go there.
I also look at the birds with them.
Get rid of the binoculars.
What?
Get rid of the binoculars.
Yeah.
Keep the telescope.
Something I did two weeks ago. I was reading Big Five, and they had 20 power binoculars in it, and I thought, I ought to get it for that. The girls would look bigger. And I'm dragging along. You know, I'm dragging along on the bottom on some of these things.
Yeah, just don't get the night vision one.
They're not
that's
worth
an
it.
Idea.
They ain't worth the money.
Everybody's
well,
green.
They are because they're great for looking
everybody's
at the stars.
Bring forth thoughts to rescue them. And put an end to bad thoughts. So you talk about putting an end to bad thoughts because at some point in time your wisdom will unfold and you will see beyond this. You see, all of this is only transitory. Okay? Section 30. Stay far away from the fire of desire. The Buddha said people who cultivate the way are like dry grass. It is essential to keep it away from an oncoming fire. Not fire, excuse me. People who cultivate the way should look upon desire as something they must stay far away from. Okay, very quick reminder that the desire is a fire that will get you burned, will burn you. Dry grass here symbolizes the six emotions and the sense organs. And the six thus, the six objects. You know what the objects are? Six objects are?
The smells.
Yeah.
Eyes, ears.
You have six
nose.
Organs, your internal
mouth,
organs, whatever mouth. Outside you can face. And those are the six objects, or six dusts. Okay? So the sound, the smell, the taste, the touch. Okay? All those are the dusts, the objects, the six objects. Are like the fire. Okay? So internally, your sense organs are very fragile. You pursue all these. You keep on looking at women or looking at the objects. Okay? Looking at the men. you are actually are bringing your dry grass closer to the fire. That's why Venerable Xu Yun, for example, when you see him in his pictures, his photographs, his eyes are practically closed. And for a lot of us, so-called cultivators, you see a monk, you see some of them make it a point to always have their eyes closed. It looks more impressive. They only made it to first dhyana and they always have their eyes closed. Anyway, what are emotions? You are the seven emotions. Number one is joy. Number two is anger. Number three is anxiety. Number four is pensiveness. Number five is grief. Number six is fear. Number seven is fright. Do I have it?
No. There.
No, I don't. Okay. Don't have a slide for that. Excess emotions are bad for you. For example, excessive joy will hurt your heart. I think Flavia can tell you more about this because she specializes in these things here, right? Excessive joy can hurt your heart. Excessive fear or fright will have detrimental effects on your kidneys. If you have kidney problems, you know why. Okay? Excessive grief or anxiety affect your lungs. Lungs. Okay. Excessive pensiveness, too much thinking, hurt your spleen. And excessive anger, the liver, damages your liver. So you see people who are prone to getting angry, like Ralph, for example, he's going to have tremendous liver problems. Tremendous. My master, my late Vietnamese master, has an anger problem. And his liver is not in good shape, nor is his heart. When you hurt the liver, you also hurt the heart. It's like coming pairs. Okay? So, be careful with excessive emotions. That's all I have.
Joy, grief, anger, fear, pensive.
Yeah, pensiveness, fright, anxiety, all those things. The five organs.
Well, there's five.
Yeah, internally in Eastern medicine we talk about the five organs, right? The five major organs. So the five major organs are really affected by those five major emotions. Okay, that's how the Eastern medicine deals with health, regulating emotions and desires. In the Tang Dynasty in China, there was a Chan master, Yana master Dao Lin. Dao meaning the way, Lin meaning forest. He lives on treetops and earned a nickname of Eagle Nest Monk. Okay? This is a Chan master. What he does is that instead of living in a regular house or a hut like most people, he climbs on top of a tree and stays there. Okay? By himself. So, and he's very famous. So one day the country's prime minister came for a visit and said, humorously, he says, Venerable Master's place of abode is kind of dangerous, isn't it? And Dao Lin, Dhyana Master, replied, Your Eminence is in much greater danger than I am. So the Prime Minister says, Disciples is in a safe height. How can I be more at risk? See, he refuses to take the second meaning. Okay? I'm at a safe height. I'm well grounded. how can I be more at risk than you are? The Zen master said, dry grass and fire are close to each other. Constantly chasing after emotional desire, you don't think that's dangerous. So that's what he taught the prime minister. Don't chase after emotional desire that much, because you're at risk right now. All right, any questions? Section 31, when the mind is still, desire is dispelled. The Buddha said, there was someone who was plagued by ceaseless sexual desire and wished to castrate himself. The Buddha said to him, to cut off your sexual organ would not be as good as to cut off your mind. Your mind is like a supervisor. If the supervisor stops, his employees will also quit. If the deviant mind is not stopped, what good does it do to cut off the organ? Okay? Get back to the source of it all. That's your mind. Okay? This monk here has very high sexual desire. He couldn't stop thinking about women. No matter what, how hard he worked. And so he got fed up and he wished to cut off his male organ. And the Buddha caught him in time and reminded him that you have to deal with the boss, the guy in charge, the supervisor. The supervisor is the one who is in charge, who's directing the traffic. So if you want to deal with sexual desire, you have to deal with the mind, not deal with the extremities. Okay? His sexual desires are driven by the mind. So the Buddha spoke a verse for him. Desire is born from your intentions. Intentions are born from thoughts. When both aspects of the mind are still, when there is neither form nor activity. The Buddha said, this verse was spoken by the Buddha Kashyapa. You'll be hearing about this name very often. The Buddha Kashyapa is one of the seven Buddhas that were before Shakyamuni Buddha in our Kalpa, the worthy Kalpa. They're in this worthy era, aeon, there are seven Buddhas who appeared already. There will be 1,000 Buddhas appearing in the world. Seven Buddhas appeared already. Shakyamuni Buddha is
number 8.
He's number 8. Ooh. Kashyapa, I believe, is number 4. And they left a lot of dharmas behind for us to cultivate. So this verse here came from him.
In the recitation book, there is one section about the seven Buddhas, something about eradicating offenses.
Yeah.
Is that the seven Buddhas we're talking about?
Yes. Those are the seven Buddhas. Lipalipadi chiha chiha di tolani di niyamadi di niyamadi di niyamadi. That's the mantra to eradicate. That's the repentance mantra. It's funny you brought it up, because when I was a small boy in Vietnam, I was living with my grandma. And my grandma is a devout Buddhist. Okay, at the time she was in her 70s. I was about 5-6 years old. And I was living with her. My parents and the family in Saigon, I was living with her in the old capital of Vietnam called Hue, okay, the central Vietnam. My family and parents were living in southern Vietnam, okay. And that was because she chose me to keep her company, okay. She's you know, she said, I need company. I'm lonely. Okay. So give me one of your boys to keep me company. So she picked me. Okay. So I was spoiled brat.
You were loved.
I was very loved. I was spoiled brat. We weren't that rich. We live in a huge house, okay? And no running water or anything, so at night you have to go outside to go pee-pee, okay? That's the case. In the dark, it's kind of scary. I was scared of ghosts. So what I did is I would stand in front of, you know, like we have a veranda. So, you know, the front door, there's a front veranda, front and back, same thing, a long veranda about the length of this room here. And I would stand by up by the edge and do my business. So it smelled. It smelled a little bit over time. And finally I stopped doing that because somebody taught me that mantra. I don't remember who taught me, okay? But basically was excuse that if you recite this mantra here, you will no longer be afraid of ghosts. That's what I did. I memorized it. I don't even remember who taught me. What's the amazing thing is that the mantra is a repentance mantra.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It erases a lot of your karmas. Oh. Bad karmas.
Why recite every night?
I recite it. Every time I go out and you know, do my thoughts. I never knew it was a Buddhist thing. I couldn't care less if it's a Buddhist or non-Buddhist. It's the ghost we're dealing with.
That's cute, isn't it?
It's amazing how kind of experience that, you know, people go through to teach you.
That is cute. I like that.
So, design is born from your intentions. What are intentions? What's the difference between intentions and thoughts?
Okay, activity and application of thoughts.
Anyone knows?
Well,
what's the difference here? Desire is born from intentions. This is very important. This is where you can't be casual about this.
A little more seriousness to your intentions than to your thoughts can be fleeting.
Yeah. Thought is shallower than intentions.
Sure.
Right?
Right.
You intend. You are. Desire is born from intention. What does it really tell you? It really says that.
You wanted it. I mean, consciously.
When you have desire, you have these handles. Right? You're creating handles. You're creating these receptors for them to come in attached to you. Okay? That's why this is where you have to be honest with yourself. Just like I explained to you about my late father. He talked a very good game about rebirth. But when it comes down time to meet King Yama, And then the blessings are enough. He goes to the best heaven there is in this desire realm to enjoy life. Because the intention is never to go for rebirth. You can talk about rebirth, but you yourself know deep down that you prefer to go to the heavens and have a good time first. Rebirth can wait. Okay? Desire. Have to face it. You have to be honest with yourself. Okay? Intentions are born from thoughts.
Desire before intent. Think, then desire, then intent. Sounds like it would go that way.
According to this poem here, what happened is that what it really means is that you look at something, you have this thought. For example, you look at a man and you have this thought of sexual desire. Okay? That becomes intention. Because that thought creates a handle. And then, next time around, another layer of thoughts, more superficial thoughts, which come and go, will then rekindle it. Okay? But it's the thought that creates the desire, that creates the handle. At first. And then adds fuel to the fire. And then, when both aspects of the mind are still, when you don't give rise to thoughts, then you're not creating handles, are you? There is neither form nor activity. Form is outside, activity is inside. Do not confuse by form, okay? And therefore, inside there is no mental activity at all. And this is actually a true story. What happened is that monk was under the Buddha and at the Jetta Grove, and a very young bhikshu who was sincere and wanted to cultivate the way, but he had a lot of sexual desire, a lot of obstructions. And he's so sincere that he says, this sexual thing here is not what I signed up for. Therefore, he chose to cut it off. Luckily, the Buddha stopped him in time and explained Dharma to him, explained to him that looking at the wrong end. And after that, he started to look at into his handles, all his nature, his desires, and he quickly attained arahatship afterwards. He looked at why he had these desires, what is it he was drawn to women, and he put all those things, all those attachments down. That's how it became an arahat. Questions? Emptying, section 32, emptying out the self quells fear. The Buddha said, people worry because of love and desire. Their worry then leads to fear. If you transcend love, what worries will there be? What will be left to fear? And this is a section that comes from, as it has its source, the Maha Nirvana Sutra. Hopefully someday I explain it. In the Sagely Conduct chapter, basically says that, points out to the fact that love and desire engender fear and worry. So to end love and desire is really to put an end to worry and fear. The worry leads to fear. Why is that? How does that work? Have you noticed that? That as soon as you worry because you're attached. If you really have no attachments, you're no worry, right? You worry, you're attached, therefore, with attachment, you worry because you fear losing it. Yes. Or not getting it. Right? You worry, and worry very quickly turns into fear. Mind has a way of feeding on itself. Once it gets going, it takes no time before that worry turns into fear, and it only escalates. That's the nature of our mental, of the workings of our mind. At least that's my personal experience. Anything, anyone else has a different personal experience? There are seven kinds of worries. Do I have it here? You worry about your body, your lifespan, a disease, mistakes, disaster, separation from loved ones, and death. Anyone has any comment about these seven broad categories of worries? Number one is clearly body. How much time we spend every day on taking care of our body. Or every time something doesn't feel right, we worry, don't we? What does it tell you? You're so attached to your body. You have to recognize that. That's part of cultivation. Now, lifespan. You should be worried about your lifespan. How much time do you think you have left? Not as much as you think. Disease, right? Mistakes. Boy, you don't want people to know about your mistakes. Not that it can bring you a lot of trouble, it's just you don't want people to know. That's more important. Disasters, you're helpless. Disasters convey a helplessness.
That's true.
Okay? Separation. Ah, that law of thing. And death. What's the difference between lifespan and death?
One's all of it and one's the end of it.
The time in between.
One leads to the other.
The time in between. How much you have before you, when you started and when you're leaving.
Yeah. One is that you have more time. One is you ain't got no time, babe.
You ain't got no time, babe.
This is now or never. Okay?
If you lose the fear of death, it is very, very, very uplifting.
Why? Have you lost it? How do you know?
I did. I'm not as strong as I was when I did it 12 years ago, but I lost it.
Mm-hmm. We faced it already.
It was spectacular. The blissfulness of not worrying and not being afraid of it. The fear was gone. Mm-hmm. It really was.
I think that's because at that moment, you know, we all of a sudden you're free. And then you get a new lease on life and you get reattached again. And
now, no way, I'm home. What you just described right there. When you have to face it, okay, now's the time. I've shut everything down. And you say, like, oh, I signed everything. I'm free now. But then they give you another 15, 20 years to come back. Wow, this is kind of nice. I don't want to leave now.
The freedom.
Start over.
Yeah, that is reattached. And then you know what? The glue is even stronger now.
I've gotten more attached than I was at that point. That's what you exactly explained. Can I tell them about writing the stuff down? Would it be helpful?
What?
Writing down all the things I had to do before I died?
Yeah, you can talk whatever you want.
Okay, well, anyway, I was 5 days in bed after my cancer surgery. And on the second day, I got out a yellow pad and I wrote down the full pad full of things I had to do in case the surgery wasn't successful. As soon as I got well enough, I was going to do it. And then I thought that night and the next morning, you know, I got some Mickey Mouse things on there. I ought to get those off there. Those aren't that important. So I started lining a few of them out. And I had two more days to do lining out. And at the end of the 5 days, I marked off the last one. And the sheet was blank and I was no longer attached. And my interpretation of that, geez, I'm not afraid of death. I don't have anything to do.
No.
Nothing is important.
Not true.
And so, well, but I didn't know about reincarnation, and I didn't know about trying to make sure I got to Pure Land.
No, Mel, you. When I saw you a few years ago, three and a half years ago, you were terrified of death.
It was coming back.
As Ken said.
It was coming back.
He was terrified.
So it was 10 years later.
He was frozen. You were frozen when I first saw you in your house, when you gave me those
ivy vines?
Yeah, the vines. You were so strong. You were terrified.
I didn't think I was, but then what do I know?
What about people who are suicidal?
What about them?
The fear of death. Is that detachment of what?
Well, they are no, facing the pain, a lot of pain first, that overwhelms the fear of death.
Okay. Yes, some people, they want to commit suicide, but they don't really do the job.
Right.
But what about the people who do the job?
Well, they went too far.
But it's killing. It's killing you when you kill yourself.
I mean, they're not that lucky. But usually most people fail.
They do.
Or they back out. They chicken out first.
Chicken out.
So you don't get off the wheel. You commit suicide. You create a lot of karmic debt. You increase your karmic debt hugely.
Why?
Because you have a human body.
Why?
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 Kill it.
No, it's a lot of other
reasons. Big kill.
No.
The biggest attachment is to the self.
No.
You try to.
No. You see, that's why I made you read that book, The Ten Dharma Realms Not Beyond Single Thought. You see? When you die, when you kill yourself, what state of mind are you in?
Depressed.
Confused. Extremely confused. Extremely in pain. Extremely confused. What kind of rebirth do you think you're going to get? In that state of mind,
the worst, in the hell,
evil paths, the three evil paths. Okay, if you are in that frame of mind,
you can't,
that's where you're gonna go next. That's all you can think of. You think it's a lot of fun. You go down to the hell. There's so much suffering that you are in such great pain. Look at your leg pains. When you're in pain, what can you think of? Nothing. Your mind is totally confused. That's where you go. Now you know why the 49-day Dharma is so important. Because they still have 49 days, 7 weeks.
So that state of confusion is worse in a suicidal than it is in a regular death?
Absolutely.
But there's still confusion in a regular death.
Still a lot
death.
Of confusion.
But it's worse when you're...
That is total confusion.
Oh, yeah, okay.
That's why we can help jump in and help them clear the head, you know, for 1 week, 2 weeks, 2 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, and so on. We're not only talking about only blessings here, also where they want to go. Remember, King Yama asked you. He's a very kind guy. He says, where do you want to go? And the guy said, I want to go to hell, because that's what all I can think of right now. That's where I belong. You think that book is just that? You see, the Mahayana wisdom is so incredibly deep. You've been reading it for years now. You still don't understand why we make you read it. Because eventually someday you understand. Someone asks you, the king asks you, where do you want to go? And the person who kills himself basically is so confused that chances are that he's going to fall, most likely.
But that confused?
Hmm?
But that confused? That's like really confused. That's like a person, hey, you want $1 million?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So do you lack the lack that will, or is it just your karma coming out?
Let me give you an example. There's at the Buddha's time, there's a king called Ashnata Sutra. He is a very evil king. He killed his own father. You heard of him? His father king is Bimbisara. He killed his own father and he so that he could become a king. Okay? He imprisoned him, by the way. Starved him to death. Now that's another story. That's a Pure Land Dharma I explain in the future. But this king here was a follower of Devadatta. Devadatta is the arch enemy of the Buddha. Okay?
Devadatta?
Devadatta, yes, you'll be hearing more of him. And he bowed to Devadatta as his master. Basically, they got into a contract. Devadatta says, help me kill the Buddha. I take the Buddha's place and I help you kill your father. You become your father, you take your father's place. That's the kind of contract they got into. So Devadatta got a lot of help in trying to kill the Buddha. You think being a Buddha is fun? No, it's a lot of danger. That's why, part of the reasons why the second patriarch hasn't showed up yet. You don't want to show up before you're ready. Because people want to hurt you. Okay? So anyway, this king here, this young king here, is very evil. So he's killed his father, right? Okay, basically committed one of the most serious offense as a lay person he committed. Okay, but then later on he converted into Buddhism, Mahayana, and became a very faithful, very devoted, faithful, and he built a lot of temples. He built, he made a lot of offerings, and he allowed a lot of people to leave the home life, become monks and nuns. He helped tremendous, created tremendous merit and virtues. Okay, so he had both mixed bad karmas, very bad karma, and very good karmas. So when he died, okay, he's a very good Buddhist for the latter part of his life. His name is mentioned, for example, in the Churangama Sutra, where the Buddha said, was talking about viewing. Okay, so he's mentioned. He's one of the regular listeners of the Buddha's sermons. Very, very devoted. When he died, he was lying on his dying bed. And of course, being one of the more powerful kings at that time, who was surrounded by his own ministers, day and night. They take turn in fanning him and taking care of him, right? So in India, it was pretty hot. So what happened is one of the ministers who had to take care of him, had to cater to him day and night, was fanning him and fell asleep, dozed off, nodded off, and dropped the fan on the king's face. Okay? And the king happened to be dying. And in his dying thoughts, he had this thought of anger. He said, I'm not dead yet. And yet, that's how disrespectful they have become already. And he was so angry. See, the king is very full of himself. And with that thought of anger, okay, he died. That's his last thought. A thought of anger. And at the time, he also got help from the monks and nuns who also were by his dying bed, reciting sutras and creating merit virtues for the king, on the king's behalf, while he was still alive. And the monks happened to be in Aha and saw it happen. And he said, bad news for the king. He's going to have a very bad rebirth. And sure enough, the king will be born as, in the venomous insect world, he became a serpent. Poisonous snake. So the Ahat immediately convened a ceremony. Basically, this is written by these Hinayana Sutra, therefore they don't have the 49 day thing. Okay, so what I, let me interpret it more loosely as a 49 day Dharma. Okay, and they executed the Dharma to help the king, so the king quickly obtained reincarnation. He didn't live very long as a venomous snake. He was reborn in the heavens very quickly through the assistance of the Buddha's disciples. That very thought, very last thought, dictated where he would be reborn. Right. So imagine your intermediate skanda body right there. You have all these things. You're hungry, for example. Who's feeding you now? Tell me. You've been used to eating 3 meals a day. Now your body is not responding to you anymore, and you're hungry. What are you gonna do? Or you have all these afflictions affecting you. Okay. It's not a fun time. So that's why the Buddhist Dharma, we give them a shelter, we give them food to eat, we give them a Dharma that allows them to eat as well. Yeah? That's why this is why the Buddhist Mahayana Dharma is so compassionate. All right, one more thing, fears. 5 kinds of fears. Okay? Lose your life. Bad reputation. Too late for me. Stage fright. You know what stage fright is? What it really means?
Afraid to be around people?
What do you think?
Do things in front of
you. You see, when I was in sales school in IBM, this is what we learned, how to deal with stage fright. Make a presentation to 300 people in the audience.
Yes.
Frightened to death, let me tell you. Okay? What does it mean? In Buddhism, we call it the...
Confidence?
No.
You're afraid of making a mistake?
No. This is what I'm teaching you now that you ought to be aware of, because you're at the stage right now where you have to be aware of these things.
You're afraid of people seeing your faults.
No. You see, that's why you have to be. That's why I'm teaching you this, because I want you to be aware of it. And you to be more gentle. Because it's called in Buddhism. It's called the assemblies. Awesome virtue. Da zhong wei de. Da, great. Zhong, assembly. Wei, awe, awesome, awe inspiring. De, virtue. Very precise. Buddhism is so precise. Because you guys don't see the world as understand about stage fright. They train all these things that they never understood why. Okay? And today I'm revealing to you the secret why there's something called stage fright. Because of something called great assembly, awesome, awe-inspiring, and virtue. That's the nature of stage fright. Okay?
That means you do have...
You remember...
You don't have the virtue. I mean, what does that mean?
You remember what you related me the story that you went to the Dharma, the Jewel Dharma Temple in Irvine? Remember? You and Josefa?
Yeah.
Okay? To listen to a PhD guy teaching you about Buddhism?
Yeah.
Okay? Uh-huh. There are 3 people in a classroom, one man, another smart guy, and 2 women.
Yeah.
And what happened to that PhD professor? Yes, you guy.
Everything didn't seem to work.
He stuttered.
Yeah.
He was tense.
Yeah, that too.
He was right.
Of them.
He was not in a good mood because everything failed to work for him.
He was so stiff. He was so frightened. He couldn't put his fingers on it. Why?
Kung Fu.
Kung Fu.
Their Kung Fu.
Their Kung Fu. Because they came there, okay, unknowingly, they said, what does this guy have to offer?
Yes.
What is he about? So it's like having two huge searchlights shining on this guy. That's what the nature of stage fright is. Now you understand, don't you?
Uh-huh. But it was not our intention, though.
Doesn't matter.
You were curious. You were curious.
Yeah, we were just curious.
Yeah. It wasn't, imagine if you were me, what kind of effect it's going to have on him. This is when they came there and say, I wonder what he has to offer for me. That alone is enough to frighten him. Imagine you went there and says, what have you got for me?
They did. Hmm? Silently they did.
No, silently they were gentle. Now imagine you are in a meeting. Someone is making a presentation. Have you got? What do you think he's going to do to the presenter? Kung Fu. You have to learn to be gentle with it. Because you're affecting people. Why would I proceed the meeting by saying a boy here, a young man, can handle 100 people in the same room easily? Because the reverse is also true. You put 100 people making a presentation to you, you can frighten them just as well. You have that Kung Fu, that kind of Kung Fu you have. With Kung Fu comes responsibility. You learn, you have to learn to be careful not to abuse it. So it applies, you go to any temple, you meet, you go to sutra lecture, you look there, because that's what I did when I'm in my younger days. Okay, I was in a lower level than you are. I look at this famous master. I won't tell you his name because I want to avoid embarrassing him. Very famous one. Very, very famous. And he had this special training session for level people only, and only very close people who are considering leaving the home life. Okay? In the mountain, I went there. It was so famous. And I was still searching for a master. Remember, my master just died recently. Okay, so I'm in search for a new teacher. So I heard this guy went there, drove a long distance to go there. Okay, had to lie to the DRBA so that I could get away from them. Okay, I was searching for a teacher. I went there and said, what have you got? And the guy froze. He could not even explain the Heart Sutra. He stuttered the whole time. I was so unimpressed. It saved my life, because if I had been impressed, I would have left the RBA then. That then I didn't realize, and now I play back, you know, all these major turning points in my life, my cultivation life, I realized I frightened him. He froze because I shone the light on him. You can make a difference. You go in the meeting, the sutra lecturer, and say, I support this poor and ridiculous monk. Then I feel better. You come to the lecturer and say, what have you got for me today? I fear. I tremble inside. You may not see it, but my stomach moves. You have the power. Be careful in meetings. Okay? You can do that to others very easily. Tell you another anecdote that I'm going to tell you, because this is so important, you have to be realized. It's so important. I like to watch tennis. Roger Federer, okay? There's a new kid in town called, what's his name?
Djokovic.
Djokovic, thank you.
Okay.
He's going to be number two. He's going to be number two because I saw the U.S. Open finals. He's going to surpass Rafael Nadal. You know why? Because Djokovic can reach first Vienna. Nadal cannot. Okay? So his concentration is higher than Nadal's. And his body, well, they're going to have the same physique. Basically. Okay? So eventually he's going to surpass Nadal. And he ran to a guy called Roger Federer in the finals. Okay? And Roger beat the heck out of him. Three sets out of five. Three straight sets in the finals. And in the end, Roger's comment was that three straight sets, the score, it's kind of brutal for Djokovic. Because Roger Federer knows. You know why? Roger is at second Vienna. The same physique with similar techniques. Okay? There's no way Djokovic can beat Roger Federer. I don't see anyone can beat Roger Federer unless he beats himself. No tennis player has reached second Vienna yet. Okay? But that's not why I want to tell you. You remember the match before that, the semifinal match, RJ?
I didn't watch that. I only saw the final.
Was playing against a Russian guy. Roger Federer was playing against a Russian guy called, what's number four? Number four player in the world. Russian guy. Very skinny guy. Like he's 5'10", 5'11", and he's 150 pounds only. Very skinny, very fast on the court, okay? For the first set, it's back and forth. They cannot break each other's, cannot get on top of each other's game, okay? Physically, they're a match, okay? And it was something like, so close, like their total score is like 1 or 2 points off, that's it. And Roger Federer was about to break this Russian player's service game, okay? But he has a hard time. Like he would have a break point, and then the other guy would recover. He would have a break point, and the other guy would recover like that for a few times. And there's one point where when Roger Federer earned a break point. Okay, Roger Federer, you know what he did? He said, come on! And you know what happened? That was enough to break the Russian guy's concentration. That force, come on, is enough to break it, getting off balance. And he lost the next point immediately. I'm telling you this because even Roger Federer does not know. Okay? This is a trade secret. I hope that when you have this portion here, I'd like you to edit it out because it's not meant to be shared. You hear me? Because you can do a lot of damage with this. It's not meant, a lot of information is not meant for the common man to know. That ability to jar a person off balance a little bit is enough to help him win the match.
Stage.
And ever since, the Russian never recovered. Never could recover. You see, I chuckled when you told me you related the story at the Jewel Dharma Temple. And I said, you girls don't know what you can do to others. Be careful. You have the ability and the power and the kung fu to affect other people in a good or bad way.
But even as gentle as they were, they still...
Because that guy is fooling himself. Because he says, I'm a PhD guy, couple of women, stupid women, okay? Who never been here before, who don't seem to know that much about Buddhism, okay? I'm a PhD guy, I'm the pet I'm a big Dharma protector of the temple, you know? And when the bright light shone, he said, whoa! He was frozen. He didn't even know that. It's the same thing that Dharma Master, the famous Dharma Master who froze in front of me, would never know to the end of his life. Serious damage. He probably should stop lecturing. Oh yeah. He says, I'm no good at this.
Second greatest fear. You know what's number one? Mm-hmm. You know what's number? No, it's number one. It's number two.
But number one?
Dying, death. Studies have already shown that to speak in front of a group is the second greatest fear. And then was number one is dying. When you die, that's number one.
Okay.
That's true. So
stage fright is the second.
The second, yeah. But you know that's why they have Toastmasters and all that for salespeople to get in front to learn to speak in front of people. It's really scary. You know when you first speak in front of an audience, if you don't train yourself. It's hard to project. I mean, I've literally gotten up in front of people and it's just like my voice like starts stuttering. It's really hard. You have to force yourself and you have to take classes to speak in front of people.
You have to realize my father is a pretty good lecturer. He has been lecturing sutras for 15 years. He's pretty good. He has a good following. That's why when he died, a lot of people showed up. He is very well known. Okay? And he considers himself to be pretty good, about in a vicinity of Hangzhou even, okay. He's that proud of himself. In terms of Vietnamese lecturers, he's one of the best, okay. But he doesn't have enough kung fu. His first year. Okay? And what happened is that he's arrogant and he had my younger brother Viet in the audience once. And became arrogant. He froze. So Viet knew better. Ever since after that, he's always supportive of my father. So every time Viet is in the audience, my father lectures even better. You have that kind of impact. If your kung fu is higher than a lecturer, okay, you go to a temple, and lecturer is not, kung fu is not the same as you, what happens when you raise a question? Isn't that what happened?
So.
I went there once, I saw it, uh-oh. And guess what? I never explained it to you, did I?
No.
Some lesson, you need to have a little bit more faith, more blessing.
She was bringing us the Shirogama Sutra.
And this guy here was asking questions left and right. Which is fair. You didn't have the intention of causing trouble, but you were arrogant. See, like this guy here. When he first came to the lectures, he's arrogant. Now he's so different. Look, you see how he sits nowadays? Quietly absorbing like an idiot. Remember, before he used to ask questions like crazy. Good questions. Which is a shame he doesn't do it anymore. Okay? That's what happens. You can do the kind of damage you can do if you have kung fu and you have the wrong intentions. Am I making sense? I'm asking you to be very careful. It's all in your intentions. Okay? Nothing wrong with wanting to know. But guard against arrogance. Because what's going to happen to that nun at the monastery? You ask question out of the desire to want to learn, okay? But
not to fix her.
But the more answers she gave you, the more you became unconvinced. Pressure on the lecturer, let me tell you.
I see what happens.
It builds up and builds up and builds up. And then that's how she heard the things like, I don't know, even he noticed that. I'm so glad you're in the audience. I'm glad to have you in the assembly because she has to get you on her side. That's one of the tricks you do. You change the person's intention by getting him or her on your side. If you're on the opposite end, on your receiving end of that force. Am I making sense?
It's a good idea. Yeah.
That's what the experienced lecturers and salesmen, you know what they do? They don't ever go to a lecture on a sales pitch. They always go way ahead of time. What for? To mingle with the audience. Get them on their good side first. So if any of you decide to be a salesman, you could do a killing. Number five, fall into the evil paths is the last fear. Okay? Any final questions before we close it for today?
You cover that?
What?
He wants to know what an evil path is.
Evil paths just the opposite of the path?
The evil paths are the three evil paths. The animal realm, the ghost realm, and hells.
Yeah.
And they basically are, as Buddhists, you want to stay as far away from them as possible because they're not fun places. Once you get in, who knows when you can get out? You never know when you can get out. It takes forever to get out. Unless you get help. That's why it's a real fear for Buddhists or people who know that to fall the three evil paths is just one of the worst things would happen. For us, it's even worse than death. Because you may die and then you get reincarnated, okay? But if you fall into the three evil paths, you never know when you can escape. One of the most difficult places to get out of is the three evil paths. It's very easy to get into, and it's impossible to get out of. It takes forever and ever and ever. What do I mean, looking back?
Like, if you cultivate, but worry about falling into evil paths, that's bad.
Yeah. You progress. You don't fall back. Best deal is to go to Pure Land. If not, you go for human realm or the God's realm. You don't want to go in the evil path. Asura is also considered an evil path because they're not fun. They're not fun. Sometimes they're okay, sometimes they're not. So the purists would say it's not okay because they really suffer a lot. They're angry a lot. They're confused, and they get hurt very often as well. Okay? It's not a fun place. Evil paths are the people in the know says when I cultivate, I want to avoid planting the seeds for the evil path. That's why we cultivate. Minimize those seeds. We plant more of the good seeds so that they outnumber the evil ones. And then we create a cause and we create conditions so that those good seeds mature before the evil seeds. Because the evil seeds we have a lot. Okay? So we erase evil seeds and we kill, we destroy a lot of evil seeds, and then at the same time we create conditions so that the good seeds mature before the evil seeds. Okay? Alright.
Could I ask one last question?
Sure.
The just to define it a little closer for me, in the giving that we do for the intent, for the offering of for someone who has passed away, is there a specific place that we give, and is it, what do we give and where do we give? Or is it just any giving and anything?
You is there mean for the deceased, right? Or yeah, for yourself?
No, in on behalf of the person who has died.
Okay. You track the prior section says you there's some multiplier effect depending on where you give. Okay. You give to a bad person versus giving a good person who holds five precepts. Okay. Or versus a person who is showed up on a first stage arhat. It's not as meritorious as giving to second stage arhat, and so on and so on. So there are a bigger and bigger multiplier depending on where you give. Okay. In essence, when you give the triple jewel, it's probably the best. As long as you ask a question, I'm going to venture some more information for you, Janine, for you to consider. If your mother-in-law leaves you some money, any kind of inheritances, whatever you don't need, I would give it on her behalf.
But where do you give it? And what
okay.
Do you
give? What it does is that it creates a leverage effect. You give it so you, as a giver, create merit and virtue for yourself. We all need merit and virtues, don't we? If I don't, I wouldn't be lecturing to you. Okay? Is my doing, what am I doing? Giving you dharma. Right? So we all need, so we have the effect of giving, we create merit and virtue for ourselves, but also for the deceased or the person you're doing on their behalf as well. Okay? And they need that as well, because that goes into their accounts. Okay? It's important because each lifetime we have a certain affinities only. This now is the time to create it with them. Because the next time, who knows where we're going to be. Maybe you're going to go to the fall, into the evil path, okay? Or maybe you go to a different realm and we have a different set of mothers and fathers and so on, okay? So if you don't need the money that the deceased leaves you, okay, then give it on their behalf to the triple jewel. Okay, that's one of the better things you can do. All right. Does that answer your question?
Somewhat, but okay. Money's the best.
No, not necessarily.
Well, it's one of the better.
If you have money, give money. If you have whatever, you can give whatever. See, you shouldn't be too stuck on money.
Oh, no, I'm not. I mean, I just want to know. You say,
for example, let's say like he goes and he hits a woodfish. What does it do? He's helping the great assembly, isn't he? He's creating merit and virtue for himself, right? So what does he do? He can choose to say, okay, instead of using it, let me dedicate it for someone else. That's what we do at the end of the lecture. The kind of merit and virtue we create today, we dedicate it for all living beings being reborn in the Western Bliss Pure Land.
But we all have levels of value.
I have a question about giving it away. Okay, once you give it away, you no longer accrue in your own account. So you don't have none.
Is that what you think?
Well,
you actually have more.
So you give the more. What does it mean when you give it away?
The more you give, the more you
because
get.
Because one thing you have in your account and when you give away.
To me, it is such a dirty trick.
You give it away, you don't have a self.
Okay? It's such a dirty trick because what happened is that when you give it away, okay, there's a multiplier effect. If you believe in that, okay? I'm not asking you to believe that. If you can believe that, then actually what it means you're getting more back, aren't you?
The more you give, the more you receive.
But then your intentions are selfish.
No, but you
can, let's say you give $1, okay, to a what is that section now? Section 13 or 12, okay?
Yeah, talking about different levels of giving.
Okay, let's say you give $1.
To a good person.
Okay. Which is for the sake of example.
Right.
And the multiplier is about 1,000, let's say 10,000, okay? What happens is you're creating the merit and virtue of $1 from your pocket, you're creating a value of a worth of $10,000 in your account. Okay? So far so good? You follow me so far? This is Buddhist wisdom here. You give $1, you are accruing actually $10,000.
So 10 times.
10,000 times, or maybe 10 times, who cares? Doesn't matter. It's multiplied, it's not that important at this stage. Okay. But you are, there's a multiplier effect. It's never less than one. By the way. It's never less than one. It's always more than one. Whatever the size is, depends on a lot of factors. It depends on you, depends on the receiver, depends on the value, depends on a lot of things. Never mind about multiplier. Okay? Just saying there's a multiplier, therefore you're accruing, you're creating value for yourself. That's how you get richer. You see, right now in our world, you get rich by doing what? By sweat, by your sweat and blood. Actually, what you are doing is you're withdrawing. You're not really creating value. You're taking from your savings.
What do you mean?
See, even Buddhists don't even know.
You're working, you're earning it.
Then we're not understanding what I mean. On the surface, it looks like you're earning money.
Yeah.
But actually, you're withdrawing from your savings. Because if you didn't have it, you couldn't earn it. How come he can earn more money than I can? You think he's smarter? Possibly. You think he's more educated? No. Is he a better programmer? No. So what do you think?
It's a matter of opinion.
See, you ask me, I say no.
That's what else.
I can be arrogant too. But the point is that the money that comes your way is really a withdrawal. It's not earning. You earn by giving.
Unless you got it by doing good. That's what you're really saying.
You're doing good is, aren't you giving?
Well, yes. Mm-hmm.
See, the more you give, the more value you create for yourself. That's what makes you a superior person.
But is that the wrong motive? Is that the wrong intention?
No, that's a fact of life. We need food to eat. We need clothes to wear. Otherwise, we die of cold and hunger. Okay.
But that's
part of our blessings. If you don't have enough blessings, then you die of hunger and cold and thirst. Right? So, the common misperception is that you create wealth with your sweat and blood. No, you are simply bringing about the causes and conditions for you to make withdrawals from your savings account. Why do you think we live such a simple fashion? Because we know that whatever money we take from you is what comes from our savings account. If we're not careful, our savings account run out, guess what happens? We're eternally alive. Mm. Not only that, we have to be extremely careful because the $1 you give to the Triple Jewel, guess what happens to our accounts?
You owe 25.
I owe 25, I owe 30, I don't owe $1. I owe more than $1. That's why we were very frugal with our blessings so that we have more in store for rainy days. Because if the right person comes along and they multiply, happens to be a billion, you are really SOL. And return a late night. Okay? It happens, there's nothing you can do. What do you think? That's why a very tenuous profession, you ask me. See, you guys are, you know, you have your own patterns and so on. In our way of life, you never can tell when it's going to happen, of the multiplier effect. When it happens, goodbye. That's why you have to be gentle to us as well.
and don't overspend on you.
Yeah, I don't overspend.
Well, my thinking is not the giving of what I'm going to get back. My thinking is how do we help the debt for the deceased that you were talking about?
Yeah. The best
giving
thing.
Giving with that motive, with that intention, okay. Not what I'm going to get back.
This is a very subtle thing that is going to take time for you to understand. See, for a guy like Randy and so on, who's been exposed longer, he will understand. For a guy like Mel and Janine and you guys, will be harder. Even you, it's harder to understand. Because you still understand the multiplier effect. When you give, you are actually accruing worth. When you take money in the form of a paycheck, or whatever that you can use, that is a withdrawal.
Oh boy, that would do a lot.
It's the opposite of what you're thinking.
On the other hand, look at it this way. Look at your case, for example.
Uh-huh.
Okay, in many of your cases, okay, uh-huh. You have so many blessings already, because if you weren't as, because it takes a lot of blessings to listen to this lecture to know so many secrets, first of all. Really? The secrets are meant for you to utilize them properly. You abuse them, you make a lot of money, you only hurt yourself eventually. Because again, when you make a lot of money, what are you doing? You are exhausting your blessings. That's why we don't tell secrets, for that reason. You're exhausting your blessings, you can't use them for cultivation anymore. You are so blessed because you have enough for you to cultivate. That's your blessings. It's not. Your blessing doesn't manifest in terms of having so much money you don't become an oil baron. It's why? Because when you become an oil baron, you can't cultivate. That is not something new for you. This has been predetermined in a prior lifetime already. You're here today because you vow in the past. You take care of your retinues. Okay? That's what you vow to do, okay? And then you vow to cultivate the Mahayana. And to cultivate Mahayana, you only need to have enough. You don't want to have too much. Why? Because if someone comes along and makes an offering, the wrong person that you ask me comes along, makes an offering, you run out, the end of it.
Yeah.
Not so much living off it. If you make a lot of money, my question to you is, what do you do with it?
What if you don't?
Are you using it or are you investing? Future. You spend it, you use it right now. You're exhausting it. You take the money and you invest in the future. How do you invest in the future? By giving. And don't be too stuck on giving to only with the biggest multiplier. Give when you can. How can you, as a human being, a decent person, look at a guy who is starving right now and says, instead of giving you $1 right now, can I go to the temple, give $1 to the temple and dedicate it to you? You are nuts. Save that person first. Have a heart. Do what's right. Don't optimize all the time. That's stupidity. Give with your heart. If it's the right thing, it feels right, do it. Don't be greedy for the multiplier. That's how your multiplier becomes bigger. The multiplier is not depending on whether the receiver is a Buddha and so on. I give you another secret. Even if you give offerings to a Buddha, and let's say the multiplier is supposed to be a billion, and if you offer the wrong intentions...
To get the billion.
it's a billion, but it ain't going to mature very quickly. going to be there very deep before it can mature. Okay? It's all in your intention.
So that story of that poor couple who had that golden rabbit or whatever, that chocolate.
Yeah.
So that was actually bad for them in a way.
Yeah.
Because they would actually use it.
Yeah. They spent a lot of their lifetime enjoying the blessings. They get lost. They get confused. And then what happened is that I tell you my interpretation of that. What happened is that this is a case where we tell you more. What happened is a farmer, a very poor farmer, very destitute, a poor farmer was laboring on the field, and he made an offering to Patiyaka Buddha, who only comes down from the mountain every week to beg for food. If he gets no food, he goes back empty-handed, and he doesn't eat for another 7 to 8 days. Jeez. And they happened to have a famine then, so this Pratyeka Buddha went down for an arms balls round, and he got nothing because everyone was also hungry. So he came back. Anyway, he only had to stop at 7 houses. And then he gets nothing, he walks away. That's their dharma. So he came back empty-handed, and he was hungry. And this farmer looked at him and said, "Hey, your highness, your reverence, you didn't get anything either, huh? Everyone is hungry. But I happen to have my lunch of coarse grain, the kind that's probably with higher quality than animal feed for very poor people." And he offered to the Pratyeka Buddha and said, "You know, you don't mind the coarseness of my meal, I'd like to offer it to you." So the Pratyeka Buddha accepted the offering, okay, ate it, flew in the air and showed off his 18-month transformations, spiritual powers, and left. And for that act of offering to the Pratyeka Buddha, the farmer got that rabbit, old rabbit, that's the only thing. They had 91 hundred million aeons where he's not poor. He's very wealthy. And that happened to be Aniruddha. Mm. Anyway, so I tell you what happened. What Ryan was saying, that so that rich farmer, or that rich man who was a poor farmer, was very unlucky because he became so rich. Okay? No. What happened is that my guess is that the Pratyeka Buddha came back to help him, to teach him, because he wouldn't let it go to waste. Well, how can you cultivate? You can't eat. So that's why. But then you don't want to have too much more than you need to cultivate because it's distracting. Look at a guy like Bill Gates. He has so much money now. What are you going to do with it? Okay. So the question, the answer to your question is that it's not how much you make. Is what you do with it. Because some people, like, I tell you another thing that you don't know, like Mr. What's his name again? That rich man?
Buffett.
He's no idiot. You believe that, don't you? Why would an idiot keep on making money? Who's not an idiot? Keep on making money. You can ask me that. If I claim he's an idiot and intelligent, you can ask me, which I wish he would do, but then he gave up a long time ago.
No. Just a couple of weeks ago.
How can you be not an idiot and keep on making money?
Some people find it as a challenge to make money. It's what keeps them adrenaline running.
But then he's being surpassed by his own disciple. Because Gates now is doing charity work where he's wasting his life making money. So Gates turns out to be better than Mr. Buffett, didn't he?
More
who's smarter? You can't tell me Gates is dumber than Mr. Buffett because he learned from Buffett and now he's doing the right thing. Now Buffett's still making money.
I thought he was
so Gates. I mean, Gates is still pouring in from...
But he's orienting his life to do charity work now.
No, he has.
Why don't you charity work?
And Buffett is still doing making money, isn't he? He's going to keep on making money until he dies. That's his passion.
Yeah.
But then that's only a manifestation of what he does. You don't know what he does with his money, do you?
No.
Mahayana is never that, you know, rigid. I tell you that Buffett is much smarter than Gates. I would tell you that there's no way that Buffett is only going to be spending the rest of his life making money. I'd never buy that. If he can teach David Gates about having the courage and the wisdom to give up pursuing money and fame and go and do charity work, mm-hmm. Buffett is still superior than David Gates. Anyway, that's gossiping.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, and now it's 11:42. I think you have better things to do with your life than listening to my.
Not true.
Seems like it.
May these memories of truth adorn the Buddha's pure land, repaying the four kinds of kindness above, aiding the three evil paths below. May those who see and hear all bring forth a holy heart. And when this retribution body is done, be all born in a land of utmost bliss. See you next time.
Thank you.
Four fries, that was $4 for $20.
That's all?
$20 for a 4 gigabyte.
That doesn't work with Vista though, does it?
Huh?
It's just with Vista. USB.
Oh yeah, sure.
I have that. It works in the same laptop.
With Vista.
Also.
Oh yeah. This one's memorized. It'll work the other day.
You.
And then you can just keep adding to
it. Oh, until it fills out. It's got a gigabyte memory. But you know, that's.